This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And you're tuned in to the Morning Run. Han, Mel, and Brian Fernandez here in the studio as we take a look at the infrastructure landscape across Malaysia. Starting with the high-speed rail link, HSR, high-speed rail link between KL and Singapore. Now, we have learned that that is expected to cost 10 times more than initially expected back in 2006. Now, that's according to the Institute of Southeast Asia Studies senior fellow, Dr. Francis E. Hutchinson, who now estimates that the cost to build that 350-kilometer rail line is expected to range between 62 to 77 billion ringgit.
So what he talked about is he elaborated that in 2006, YTL Corporation estimated it would cost them something in the region of 6.3 billion ringgit to build the line from Singapore to Malaysia. In 2010, Pemandu revised that number significantly up to 17 billion. Now his latest, of course, is 60 to 77 billion. Now the key thing with that is that doesn't even include land acquisition cost. So the real cost to us as taxpayers is going to be very much higher.
Yeah, so, you know, who knows, in a few years, it could be many times more than that was projected, that 77 billion that was projected. But I think it boils down to how much this is going to cost, right? So let's say if it does cost, you know, 77 or more, how much would you have to price that ticket to recoup your investment? Already the estimated one-way ticket price is ranging between 180 to 200. Mm. But if that cuts the travelling time in half or to 90 minutes, then is it worth it? Is that ticket price going to be, should you price that higher, I guess?
Right, but I think when it comes to these big ticket infrastructure projects, profitability may take a slight backseat of sorts, because if you consider the broader implications, so for example, according to the government, the high-speed rail is expected to contribute over 20 billion ringgit in growth for the GDP, also expected to create over 111,000 jobs to be perhaps more precise, and that's by the year 2060. So perhaps looking at the longer term implications more than just whether or not each ticket is profitable.
Sure, it's like the multiplier effect, right? So increasing mobility, especially between Malaysia and Singapore, is expected to trickle down to the economy as well. However, I mean, I think the idea is also to look at the revenue model. So you don't just focus on the price of the ticket. For instance, if you look at what Japan is doing with their express trains, what they do is they get two-thirds from the fares. So they get their revenue two-thirds from the fares. And then the remaining one-third is from ancillary business. So hotels and shopping malls that they operate within that their transit centres.
Right. And that's really the emerging model, and has been for the last decade or so, in terms of how basically these things can be self-sustaining. So if you look at MRT Corporation in Singapore, for example, the bulk of their revenue actually doesn't come from fares. It comes from all their rental incomes that's recurring from their retail space.
Right, and that's a keyword there, you know, whether they can be self-sustaining without needing, you know, government bailouts that we have seen with other projects here in Malaysia. Now, speaking of, we'll also take a look at the ECRL, that's the East Coast Railway Link. So plenty of controversy and criticisms against that 55 billion ringgit price tag. Although the MRL, that's the Malaysia Rail Link, Sindran Berhad, Infra Director Norizan Muhammad Akhir, saying that that 55 billion ringgit price tag, not as hefty as some may argue.
Well, he gives the argument that from a couple of standpoints. One, technical details are different. The gauges are different from other rail projects.
Yeah, so it's not quite apples to apples.
Absolutely. And then the cost of it includes rolling stock and wagons. And also, it's very freight-centric rather than passenger-centric compared to the other rail projects. And thirdly, also, he argues that the costs are high because the terrain is much more difficult to construct. So you have things like tunnels and also elevated structures along some of the alignments.
Yeah, so at this point in time, Malaysia Rail Link is now completing the land acquisition, and they're trying to kind of finalise the rail alignment. so we really want to take a look at what the land acquisition is going to cost, because that's often the most expensive component. According to Norizan, he says the cost is not as high as mentioned, the 20 billion that was mentioned previously. But we do have Sohaimi Elias from Maybank, he's the economist at Maybank, and he estimated that the project may cost the government of Malaysia and Singapore as much as 40 billion. So. Yeah. So, that could be more than double.
So that's a big difference in the numbers. And he also, when pressed, declined to elaborate on the internal rate of return for the project. And he argues, again, as we had mentioned earlier, no rail projects in the world are profitable except in Hong Kong and in Tokyo. And he also went on to elaborate that the loan, the 55 billion ringgit loan from the Export-Import Bank of China, came at a very attractive price, and that two drawdowns have already been made.
All right, plenty of developments there, be it the high-speed rail, ECRL, and now moving on to KLIA Aeropolis now. So we've got news from the Transport Ministry saying that some 500 million ringgit that's set to be invested by both the government and also the private sector over the next 2 years.
Yeah, so this was launched in March of this year. The 60-acre site, Aeropolis, is part of the Digital Free Trade Zone, and it will see investments from the likes of people like Lazada, Post Aviation, which is investing about 30 million to develop a 17-acre e-fulfillment hub. Alibaba Group, of course, one of the anchor tenants of the hub. And this basically is expected to be the gateway to Southeast Asia. 1,250 flights weekly. And also, annual cargo volume is supposed to increase from just over 700,000 to 3 million tons by 2050.
Yeah, so if Aeropolis is the kind of gateway to Southeast Asia, what that means is essentially the goods are expected to be delivered quickly. So at least within 72 hours across ASEAN. And again, I mean, this is all in line, kind of gearing up to see where the e-commerce industry is going to take us, right? How much it's going to grow. Already there are expectations that e-commerce could grow up to 114 billion ringgit, or about 6.5% of the Malaysia's GDP by 2020.
Yeah, now here's the thing though. So as the pie grows, right, the question here is, can local players then compete with more entrants, you know, and particularly foreign challengers? Now, because we posed that question back in June this year to Alvin Chua, president of the Federation of Malaysian Freight Forwarders, you know, essentially talking about whether or not there is this level playing field. And so back then, he called on the government to make sure that there is that level playing field.
I hope the government will not just give them free way, you know. Example, like, you know, if a local forwarder, example, you know, even these e-commerce logistic players, which is coming, they also need license to operate as a courier company. They have to have license to be a custom broker. They should follow the same rule like what we are facing now. Example, you know, the non-Bumiputra Trust company, there's still 51% equity needed, you know, to have the license. And that should be imposed to them.
That was Alvin Chua, president of the Federation of Malaysian Freight Forwarders. And to download the podcast for that grill, you can download our BFM app, which you can find on the Google Play Store and also the Apple App Store. So Alvin was basically talking about the launch of that DFTZ, right, Aeropolis, and how when Jack Ma came here and made that big hoo-ha back in March, 16 freight forwarders from China also followed him here. Now, so as they are looking to expand into ASEAN alongside all these other, you know, massive, look at the likes of Amazon and whatnot, right, all these global players, whether or not Malaysia can still hold its own in the face of this increased competition. Something to look forward to as we monitor these developing trends. Coming up in just a bit, we'll have the 9 a.m. news bulletin, followed by the opening numbers on the local bourse right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.